Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. This is going to be a fun one.
Hey, I have been looking forward to this one for so long. This is our Market Mate series where we celebrate enterprises who come together and collaborate to serve their ecosystem. This is going to be a fantastic segment. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast to get this thing kicked off. We have with us VP of Customer Success and Industrial Commerce Platform Vendor Inception, Mr. David Judd. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, Stone. Good to see you.
So now, David, before we get too far into things, tell us a little bit about Inception and the concept of this episode that we're working on here.
Yeah, so Inception is a unique platform trying to solve a business problem that's been out there for a long time. We're looking to bring customers together, businesses to businesses together on the internet to be able to sell their products and services to each other. And by doing that, kind of reduce a lot of the friction that's involved in business-to-business transactions.
And then, so e-commerce has been around forever, but it's more like kind of business-to-consumer. Everybody kind of understands that. But there's a whole other world out there that's business-to-business that maybe hasn't been kind of leveraged yet.
Yeah, we're trying to solve some of the problems that have been endemic in business-to-business for a long time that's kept it from being able to be done on the internet. Mm-hmm. I was sharing with somebody an old commercial on IBM that was out in the 1980s. Where you've got a guy who's running a large organization that's sitting next to his web designer. And the web designer is previewing the new website. And he says, I got the spinning logo. I got this flaming logo, which is really, really cool. And the business owner kind of looks at him and says pensively, you know, if we could use the internet to hook together businesses, that buying and selling and orders and invoicing and inventory was all on the same system, then that would change the world. And the little web designer says, I don't know how to do that. So that's the problem that we try to solve. E-commerce has been around for a long time. Amazon is the leader in that space. We've all bought something from Amazon. We know how that works. But businesses to businesses have different relationships. They've been doing business with their customers for a long period of time. Those transactions are a higher dollar value. The products are more complicated, more individualized, more specialized, and typically that's all been face-to-face selling. Mm-hmm. And it's been hard to get away from that face-to-face selling with just telling somebody, go to the internet, find something, and buy it.
Right, because it's a little different when you're buying kind of the red hat or the blue shirt.
Right.
As opposed to, I have a complex problem that I'm trying to serve, and I don't even understand if there's a fit or not.
Well, Lee, you're very insightful for that. Here's the problem. If you want a toothbrush or you want a hairbrush.
I know what that is already.
Well, you know what that is. You can go to Amazon, you put in toothbrush, and you get 50,000 toothbrushes. You know that. But if you've got a building that needs to be heat and cooled, and you want to be able to reduce costs, and you want to know, how am I going to cut my energy cost on my building? Mm-hmm. Well, that could be new windows. That could be new air conditioning. That could be all kinds of different
answers.
And
it could be things
that
I don't even know.
You don't even know about it. So how do you go search for that? And that's kind of what we do, is we take a look at our customers' products and design the question that would lead a potential buyer to that product and present that as a solution to whatever question they're looking for.
So this type of e-commerce, this industrial-style e-commerce, is this kind of – did you create – you didn't create this category, but are you trying to kind of label it that and
yes.
be known for that?
Industrial commerce. Yeah, and the people that started this company, I have with me Mike Roush. Mike Roush is our VP of Channels and Partners. Mike and I have worked together for a long time in the enterprise sales space. I came from Oracle. I've been with Oracle for 13 years, helping customers try to find solutions to inventory problems and customer order processing. And what attracted me to this company was the fact that for the first time, we're able to find a real solution for people looking for products and services before vendors have been selected or before solutions have been detailed. And Mike and I have worked at enterprise companies that have done this. But the founders of our company ran a business of themselves, and this product came out of the necessity of finding a better way to do business. I'll let Mike talk about that.
Thanks, David. And so, Yeah, the founding of members of Inception is a fellow named Farzad Dabachi in San Francisco, and he and his wife Rhonda had founded a company called Norbachi, which is a lighting company, an LED lighting company, because what they want to do is they want to create manufacturing processes that could provide high-quality products but yet compete with the Chinese on price. And so they established this company in Los Angeles, and they were doing fine. They were doing about $5 million a year in sales. But then what they realized, they really weren't finding the type of buyer they wanted. They weren't really catering a platform sale to the industrial buyer. They were getting the person who wanted two or three high bay lights and not 500, because they were doing a new apartment building complex or building a stadium. So what they started architecting was a platform that catered towards industrial grade buyers.
But at first it was just to sell more lights. Like they weren't trying to change the world. They were just trying to sell more lights.
Exactly. So they architected a platform, and you know, Farzad had picked the brains of Amazon and Google and Shopify and WooCommerce and all of these.
So how do you pick the brains? Like, was he just calling them up?
Oh, he brought them in and had them interview. He interviewed them as though he was looking for a solution. And what he realized, there was no true end-to-end
B2B solution.
Architecture. And so I had done this before. We had done an IPO together back in 2000. So he's just a visionary when it comes to bringing solutions together to help minimize the friction.
And the waste, right? Because that's
So the very first year they rolled out the platform internally at Norbachi, they took their sales from $5 million to $30 million. Why? Because they were finding the type of buyers, industrial buyers, that they wanted.
But did it require the buyer to be part of the platform? Because it doesn't work.
No, it did not.
It did not
require the buyer to be a part of the platform. They simply bought over the Norbachi, the platform, as you do Amazon. I mean, when you buy from Amazon,
The buyer, though, has to know to go there.
Yes, they did a lot of advertising on Google to find those type of buyers.
Well, and an interesting story is our CIO, Mark Moore, was a guy who founded a company called Rhapsody. So he's very smart where it comes to technology. So Farzad made a bet to Mark. And Farzad said, I bet you can't sell this light on the internet. They call it a high bay light. It's something you'd see in the parking lot that would light a parking lot at night. It's an industrial light. Nobody would ever put this in their home. You wouldn't hang this outside your garage. You wouldn't put it in your dining room. It's an industrial light. And Farzad told Mark, he says, I bet you can't sell this light on the internet. And they bet a dollar. And before the end of the day, they got a $15,000 order for these lights. And because they found that the people were looking for this, but they weren't able to buy it anywhere. And the other thing they found was interesting,
too. So what tactic did they use to find that buyer?
Being able to present the product in such a way that it was a solution for what people were looking for.
So did they do it via content, or did they do it just a Google ad?
Some of it was Google AdWords. So Google AdWords was a way of casting a big net for somebody. Being able to buy AdWords, not the way consumers buy AdWords, but the way businesses buy AdWords.
And that's different, right?
Because people
search differently from a business standpoint than a consumer.
Very much differently. And then presenting the product on the website in such a way that the buyer could interact with the product, pick their own features and options, may not even be features and options that are offered in a standard product. As I said, when you go to Amazon, you buy a toothbrush. That toothbrush is already made, sitting on a shelf somewhere, and somebody pulls it out of stock. What Farzad figured out is we'll give them features and options. We may not know what we need to put in stock, but give them the ability to interact with it. Essentially, let them build the product themselves online, being able to facilitate that process through technology, and then they can sell things that they didn't even know that they needed. Because, as you know, a manufacturer basically is not selling a product. A manufacturer is basically selling line time. I can make anything in my plant that I need to.
Right, and instead of guessing and hoping.
Right. Now, put something out there. Here's another story they had. They sell these high bay lights. Everybody offers them in one color, which is stainless steel,
right?
Unpainted. And so they put out there, said, let's just put out some color options and see what goes on. And so somebody called up online, did a chat, and said, can you make this in purple? He said, purple? Why in the world would you want this in purple, right? So he asked the guy in the plant, said, can we make this in purple? He says, yeah, well, it'll cost about $5 to paint it. Farzad said, charge him $50. See what happens. And the guy said, yeah, I'll take 500 of those. And he said, well, what are you guys using them for? He said, we're using them for our school gymnasium. Our school colors are purple.
Right.
Couldn't
and then
find
you're like, wow. Makes sense then, right? Everything makes sense.
So when you open that communication channel to the business buyer, phenomenal things happen.
Right, because you're getting real data from the boots on the ground that are using the stuff.
Right.
They have specific needs.
Right, right.
And that's usually a disconnect because then usually higher up people are making decisions what the regular people need.
Exactly right.
So this flips that. So now, this panel here, who'd you bring with you?
So today we're very excited to have Atul with DrinkBella. Atul is one of our early clients on our platform, utilizing us for both e-commerce and logistics, as well as Todd McAllister of McAllister Retail, who's an Inception client as well.
So who do you want to start with?
Start with Todd.
All right, Todd, welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Well, tell us about McAllister Retail. How are you serving folks?
Well, we started basically selling equipment, boilers, presses, sewing machines, anything needed to make a suit, tailored clothing. Tailored clothing was a huge industry in the U.S. We started in 1988. So first set of customers were the manufacturers of suits. So we would, you know, old school, visit these accounts and sell product. And it was interesting. Somewhere about 3 or 4 years into the company, I met a fellow named George Zimmer, who had started the Men's Warehouse.
Right.
He had two stores, and he wanted to basically press clothing at each location. And at the time, no one had ever figured out how to basically take boilers and presses and sewing, standardized pricing, standardized installs, and go, you know, basically city to city. So we took on the challenge. We basically rented U-Hauls and followed George. Now, at the same time, NAFTA was hitting, and Clinton, you know, there was reasons for some of the trade agreements to push factories out of the U.S. and into other countries. So it kind of timed itself to where our efforts moved into what we call retail. And so at the time, again, nobody had figured how to take boilers, which are a very regulated product, and sell them state to state. Mm-hmm. And so we figured out that scaling process, and in the terms of leveraging these bigger accounts, we put in all 600 of the Men's Warehouse stores, all 600 of the Joseph Banks and Saks and so on. So in the retail world, we became the single source supplier.
The go-to supplier for this.
Right, which was...
And this was pre-internet, before...
Pre-internet. And then, of course, internet came on, and I was telling Michael, we decided, and wrongfully so, we decided to kind of keep this closed clientele, closed pricing, direct sales, direct manufacturing in our own little bubble, so to speak.
Right, because you had this all locked down. And
we had it locked down. And if you were a Saks or a Men's and you opened a store in Seattle or Dallas or Atlanta...
They're calling you anyway.
And it's fixed cost. It was the same cost. And we leveraged kind of the... I don't want to say NetJet because we're a small company, but the leveraging of standardized pricing, go anywhere, was appealing to these retailers.
Sure.
And it worked out well. So as we entered into the phase where there was no more expansion, kind of current situation.
Because then you're kind of beholden to them. If they stop growing, then you kind of stop growing.
And we do have all the national contracts for service and maintenance of these stores, but we decided to go ahead and move into the e-commerce space.
And now the world's open now, right?
It's open. And I kind of looked at it as like...
So were you nervous about this? Because that's a big shift,
right? I was
nervous. Right?
And Michael will tell you that I just was not a good client because I was like pushing back. You know, I was like, okay, yeah, you know, but I'll tell you.
But what was kind of the point of inflection where you're like, you know what, I can't ignore this anymore. I'm going to take a swing at this.
Complete value. Immediate value, and we recognized it early on. I mean, actually, after the web platform was set up and we got, you know, an idea of how it functioned, we immediately recognized the value of the freight piece, the administratives that are cost savings, and the user experience, because now I have all the data to make decisions on the phone one time, as opposed to these callbacks or... I'm not sure. You know, we know who's looking. We know where they are. We know what they're buying. We know in those markets if there's trade shows we want to develop. So it's endless. I mean, we can run down any one of those paths really deep. So we're just now in the process of doing that.
Mike, you.
Yeah, one point I want to add is that, you know, we initially brought to market our e-commerce platform to promote businesses transacting with each other online. Mm-hmm. But the whole premise behind our company is to eliminate, reduce the friction that exists with businesses transacting with other businesses. And what we quickly determined is that logistics is a very big pain point for customer shipping. And I know Atul and Todd can both speak to this, but shipping and logistics is a big aspect, a major pain point for a lot of people who are manufacturing, distributing, selling products. What became very interesting is UPS took an equity stake in our company in November. But we also secured.
They figured that out too. Huh?
They did. UPS, UPS and Dave
Small shipping company, yeah.
They were very interested in us because of the architecture of our platform on blockchain. But they're also very interested in our platform because what they know is they need a platform to promote to their customers to make it simpler to do business with UPS. And so as such, we now have, we're an industrial e-commerce platform with embedded logistics and shipping. And so now the shipping and the logistics aspect of it is almost like just transparent to the merchant who's shipping. It's just so easy. So again, what we're doing is eliminating the friction that exists in helping companies ship and sell products. And so that was of keen interest to both the tool I'm sure you'll speak to and Todd, but if you could speak to that for a second, what it's meant to your business.
Yeah, so if you look at outside of the national clothing chains, you have a second layer of customers that's custom clothiers or even dry cleaners, tailor shops, alteration. Those individuals typically spend $1,000 to $2,000 per transaction. Within those transactions, you have a high freight cost for sewing machines or presses or ironing boards. So what I noticed is now on phone calls, because a lot of our business is driven from the web or a call, and we can tell them on that first phone call exactly what their total cost is going to be. And I can tell you, having shipped for 30-plus years, it's never exactly what you're quoted on the screen. It's never, there's some nuances, lift gates for these retail stores and so on. I know the number when I'm on the call, and it's helped our closing rate go from probably 60% into the upper 90s. It's almost a given, because if you're a customer, even a consumer, you don't want second calls or
surprises.
Or if you say the machine's $800, I'll get back to you on freight. They may call
somebody else will
get back to them probably sooner than me.
Right. So the speed helps.
Speed, and then also on the administrative side, we have a team that handles logistics, and they're thrilled because now it's very template driven,
templatized,
because we have a. And I'm sure Atul, when you speak, can say, we know our products that are going out, we can basically frame it. Yeah. We know what it is going in. So
two stories real quick about that as well, too. We've now, a lot of companies have been making changes to the way they do business to be able to conform to the way the shippers want it to ship.
Right.
So I've got one company that was actually disfiguring their product so that it would fit in the right size box to be able to ship out on a truck so that they knew what the shipping cost was. Mm-hmm. So we told them, instead of changing the way your product is packaged, package it the way it would package correctly to ship correctly, and then let us standardize the shipping cost so that you know what it is.
Right.
We had another customer that wanted to sell on the internet. They're selling huge quantities of industrial chairs to schools and to institutions, churches were big company, a big customer for them. And they would put the chairs on the internet. They would get a price for the chairs, but they had to stop the order process until the manufacturer could go back and get a quote for the freight and then try to come back and then finish the order later on online. And by that time, the customer was gone. So being able to give them accurate quotes online for shipping while they're there increased their business quite a bit.
So that's a game changer.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's your favorite part?
I'd say at this point, that's my, at the moment, that's where I'm driving. Now we're going to move into spend and add revenue, add spending for the site. But freight is a daily thing.
Right. You're dealing with that on every order. So
exactly.
Now, how'd you even find out about these guys?
I was introduced through a mutual friend and Michael Arabia, and again, went to a luncheon with Michael Roush and recognized it. But again, I still had that old stigma of,
you've been doing it a certain way forever. So
And didn't want to, was resistant. And to verify my resistance, I still have an AOL email and I still I don't have a debit card. I'm really needing to get pulled into the current.
But that's pretty impressive, Mike, from a standpoint of on a buyer's journey. I mean, usually you go after the early adopters first and then move into, the kind of more of the masses. But to get somebody that has been old school and resistant to change in some areas to take a swing here is pretty good.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think about the origins of Inception was to help bring companies online, to transact online. I mean, here's You know, there's UPS validated this for us. There's $9 trillion of commerce that happens annually amongst and between businesses. $9 trillion. But only $500 billion of that commerce is being done electronically. So there's a massive market of helping companies who have sold traditional ways.
Right. And traditional ways are picking up the phone or going to a trade show and, you know, meeting people, friends of friends.
I was with the CFO of a company here in Atlanta yesterday. It's a $100 million a year company. Their orders come in via fax and email.
Fax. Right. Nice.
Fax. Yeah, fax. fax and email is how the orders were coming in. And they're being entered into an old ERP system by a customer service people and then, you know, getting shipped and delivered that way. A very ripe opportunity for us to work and help them digitize their products and digitize their and become more electronic. Because what we're seeing now is that as the younger generation is moving into more of the C-suites, that they want they're accustomed to the way.
Right, their expectations on speed are totally different.
So they're at home buying a pair of gym shoes on Amazon. They're accustomed to next day delivery.
Right.
They're just, they go to work and then everything changes
and
on them.
Then
why do I have
like,
to buy this?
How do I use a fax machine?
Well, yeah. What is it? Exactly. Right. What is it? Exactly.
What is that noise it's making?
Right.
But anyway, it's been exciting and we've been helping a lot of companies and I know Atul can speak to that as well for his business.
Right. So let's welcome Atul on. Welcome, Atul.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And then you're with Bella Drinks?
Yeah, Bella is an Atlanta startup, just launched maybe a little more than a year ago. And Inception has proven quite groundbreaking for us. About the history.
So tell us about Bella. How did that come about?
Well, I was infusing drinks to help my wife with her health, and we realized there was an opportunity in the market. Bella does not have any caffeine, sugar, or calories. It's an infusion of ancient herbs like
turmeric,
ginger.
How do you infuse?
We actually manufacture in Virginia, and we use dried powders of the herbs. So if you look at our drink, you'll actually see the ingredients. Mm-hmm. And we launched about a year ago, and the Atlanta yoga and wellness community just love Bella, and we're in over 50 locations. A lot of yoga studios. I think there are a few yoga studios around Atlanta that don't carry Bella. A lot of these stores like Savvy Provisions and the like and gyms, and we just went national with Lifetime Athletic as of this week, all 128 Lifetime Athletic locations. Yeah.
So now, a beverage company, there's a challenge just the weight of it, then the shipping could be more than what the beverage, you know, how do you handle that? That's tricky.
When we started, we came out of studios and we went to Asheville Yoga Festival, Atlanta Yoga Festival, and a lot of studios. There are over 3,000 independent studios, gyms, and spas around the country. And whenever we were at these festivals, studio owners would say, oh, I would love to stock it. Well, how do you ship?
Right.
Typical 15-pound weight of a case, it's a $15 ground shipping to get it there. There are no margins. The beverage business is about cents and pennies.
Right.
So we started looking at B2B, and people don't know. We were on Amazon within 2 weeks of launch. Amazon actually has a B2B section.
Tell the Inception folks.
Well,
they may not know that.
We know it.
Amazon can learn from Inception. We have been on that for a long time. It didn't do anything. So coincidentally, Michael Arabia.
Same guy.
He knew this guy.
Knows everybody.
He's one of our partners.
He's great. And he knew we were looking for a solution to reach these 3,000 studios because we had latent customer demand we could not fulfill. And we got onto Inception. Now we have signed on customers in Augusta. We just launched in Asheville this Monday.
So walk me through how that works. So now you have mm-hmm. your drink and your people are in the yoga community are aware of you, right, through the festivals. And just, I mean, you're starting out. So it's not like you're, the brand name of beverages on the planet, right? So you're out there battling like everybody else.
Absolutely.
And then so now you find Inception. So what happens now?
Yeah, Inception, the attractiveness for us is twofold. One is that from a customer experience perspective, the yoga studios, once I enroll the customer, they don't do anything. The system works beautifully. I set up an order and it's shipped through Zippy. More importantly for us, we operate out of three warehouses, one in Virginia, one in Norcross, one in Forest Park, Georgia. And all three serve different customers. Mm-hmm. Marion serves Lifetime Fitness. So we are sending truckloads of product, we are actually routing it through Zippy. We're trying to. We're getting there. We've just started. Our Norcross is direct customer business, and that also B2C. We are doing it through Zippy as much as possible. They're
and they can Amazon. Buy as little as one case at a
one
time?
One case at a time.
Right. So and that has its own challenges.
That has its own challenge. So we, for us, what you know, Michael was saying about logistics was is really the secret sauce of
and
why
that,
we
that's
love
a big
Inception.
Pain point for you. How were you doing this prior to Inception?
Well, for the studios, we were not doing it because it was just
there wasn't even a choice. You couldn't even pursue that.
It wasn't profitable at all. It was just we just could not service it.
So now that you can't, you're working with them. So what's the workflow look like now?
Well, the workflow is not as active because we are pre-funding. We are just closing around, and we don't have the capacity right now to take on a lot of customers. And frankly, Lifetime Athletic is taking up all of our time right now. So I think we have sent a few hundred orders, but it's going to start ramping up from Q3 onwards once we have the team on board and really get after the market.
Now, you want to say something?
Well, I was going to say, we talked about Amazon, that we certainly know Amazon is out there that services a B2B community. But one of the things that's interesting about Amazon, and I've done this with a few prospects when we talked to them early on that are on Amazon, I'll put their product in a Google search and see where it comes up. And it'll direct me to an Amazon site.
Right.
And as soon as I'm on the Amazon site, I see the product that that is my customer's product. And but I also see 10 other customers. Right. And then to make that worse, then Amazon is actually recommending a competitor's product, right?
Amazon choice.
Amazon
not
choice,
you.
Right? And, exactly. And the end of that story even gets even more worse because then it's not long that Amazon knows your customers, knows your business, knows your product, and they have their own product that they have that competes with that, and they've stolen all your business. So what we try to do is say, form the relationship with your customer around your product and your website.
And own that relationship.
And own that relationship yourself.
That was, I mean, I don't understand from a, I'm not a retailer, but from a retail standpoint, Amazon gets all the data, so they know that this sells, and then they just make their own version of it, and you're the research for them.
And what you're hitting on is something that's very critical in the industrial space. Because there's no industrial buyer on the planet that's going to buy over a platform where they know what they're buying, or maybe their secret sauce that's in their manufacturing processes on a platform like Amazon, where they know the data is going to be harnessed and sold. Unlike Inception, we are the Alibaba called us the un-Amazon, because when our clients transact with each other on our platform, it's a privatized transaction between only the buyer and seller.
And that's where the blockchain is coming in?
It's where the blockchain comes in, and it's a private, secure transaction. And our business model is not to harness your data and go sell it to somebody. And so we know, and that's the whole premise at the industrial level, is that they're going to want the security and knowledge that know that what that they can, they got a platform, a secure platform, they're what they're buying and selling is private and not going to be sold.
And also the traceability from a consumer good perspective, if something goes wrong with the product and you got to do, God forbid, a recall, with their system, I know exactly which case went where because the record is the record. Nothing changes. So if you look at the supply chain management, and we are very small, we don't have these problems, but we aim to be very big and there will be such problems. So we want to be ready for that day, and this helps us get there.
The person that that built our blockchain for us came from Visa Corporation. And if you think of a credit card transaction, that transaction is communicating just a few pieces of information between the seller and the buyer. And that's the same type of information that's transacted across our platform. We know there was an order. We know what the amount was. But we don't know any of the detail in that. That's then controlled by the buyer and the seller. And that's the value of the blockchain aspect of the platform.
And it really gets to the heart of the relationship. I mean, a lot of relationships are built on trust.
Right.
So if I have to look over my shoulder that my platform is kind of taking data from me and then they're going to use it against me down the road.
Well, and one other aspect of this blockchain that's interesting too is not only is a transaction secured between the buyer and the seller, but the blockchain also is used as a way of identifying the identity of that person on a platform. Another difference between us and B2C, in a B2C transaction, the credit card stands at the center of that transaction. Mm-hmm. So you can transact with somebody because they've given you a credit card. The bank has done the due diligence to check to make sure that person is who they say they are. They've got a valid address. they got a credit limit and they pay their bills. So if you have a credit card, you feel comfortable taking an order and shipping something to somebody, right, because the bank stands in the middle of that process. With us, the blockchain stands in the middle of that process because we know that that person has been identified on our blockchain. We know who they are. We validated that they have the resources, right, to be able to put $1 million order on the blockchain, where I don't know about you, but I don't have a credit card that has $1 million open to buy on it. But you can now let them transact with invoices and purchase orders like you've done for the last 10 years, knowing that that's secure, that the transaction's secure. And we're actually now doing some work now with a couple of banks who've seen what we've done and saying, you know what, that transaction is secure enough that we'd like to participate in the financing of that. Mm-hmm.
So, and that's more valued to your customers that are using the platform.
Exactly. Financing, again, part of the friction process that kind of hinders or slows down businesses transacting with other businesses. And so the financing aspect will be available soon on our platform. And we're looking at other services as well, insurance. We're looking at a number of
things.
To be
a complete platform to solve all these pain points.
Exactly.
Yeah, Lee, I believe that because early on it seemed – like, am I getting into a transactional relationship? And it's not. It's very deep with the Inception team. We talk to, we run ideas by them. We have open communication. You don't. I was drawn mainly to that, trust factor for guidance and for input. And it's been immediate and it's been consistent. Because again, for me, this is a new journey. So that's been invaluable. We're not off on our own with the platform. We feel very partnered.
And that's a challenge in some of these online platforms where they're like, it's kind of do it yourself, go figure it out. And you're like watching videos and you're just kind of, and you say, forget it. I got a real job. It's not supposed to get in the way of doing your work, right? It's supposed to help you do the work faster and easier. So now, any advice for somebody that's out there, Atul and Todd, about, if they were dipping their toe in this?
My perspective would be that if you look at customer experience, you choose the platform that enables that and doesn't get into the way. And for me, Inception has been that platform. So I start always with the customer. And then beyond that, the platform operates beautifully. They are always helpful on top of things and they are building. So get in fast, get in now, because it's if you say, okay, I'm going to wait for things to mature and then get onto a DLT-enabled platform, you'll have too much of a steep learning curve. Mm-hmm. Start it now and then learn with the platform and grow with the platform.
And you found them to be helpful as well?
Extremely. We are in the process of shipping 130 orders out next week, and they are helping me just get it right. We don't have much of a team. I'm a marketer. We don't have technology in house.
And Dave's good at loading trucks.
I know how to run a fork truck.
Well, you said something, Atul, that I agree with. I mean, we get caught up in company systems for our people, and I get that. That's part of our responsibility. But I always, especially with Inception coming on, it made me go back to the roots and say, this is really about customer experience, period.
Right.
And they're giving me more tools to make that fast.
To make you look good.
Make me look good and cheaper. Right. Again, it's a monetized savings as well as a better experience. So, those are two things everybody's looking for.
Absolutely. Now, Mike, any industries or is this like kind of any B2B or there's kind of sweet spots? Like how are you kind of going to the market with this?
Where we're having the most success right now are those companies that are doing a lot of shipping of irregular type items.
Irregular type
items. Irregular. Mm-hmm. Heavy, long, a lot of structure. Because as legacy freight companies and parcel companies charge you a lot of different surcharges. Could be for lift gate needed, residential drop off, the zones being delivered to. A lot of challenges for them.
So it may not be an industry specific. It could be just any industry that does something weird shape or heavy.
That's it. That's been right now where our sweet spot has been, is those companies that are manufacturing or distributing products that have odd or irregular type of shipments and sizes and weights, and who are going to different zones, or those companies who actually want to get out of their own. What we found is a couple of clients who are only selling locally because they had delivery trucks. But through our platform, they now become nationwide.
Because it was too much of a hassle. I guess you, Tori. Yeah,
absolutely.
You can relate to that. You resemble that remark.
Yeah, we had customers who wanted the product, and we could not get it to them, and now we can. We've already started expanding beyond Atlanta fast.
Yeah, so what we're helping companies do is grow their top-line revenue because we're giving them new channels and new markets to sell to. They didn't
even consider it because it was too much. It seemed impossible.
Well, they were limited by their own logistics capabilities with their own delivery trucks. And with us, we're a national global platform.
Good stuff. Well, Todd, if somebody wanted to learn more about your firm and how you're serving folks, what are the coordinates?
Well, we go to McAllisterRetail.com, and it's got a good story. It's got the products.
And your ideal customer is who?
Ideal is any department store or independent men's clothing store that does alterations. So we're after the pressing, the sewing, and cleaning, spotting, or whatever they might have to do to get the garment ready to go to the end user.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Atul, your ideal customer, still yoga, fitness, wellness companies?
Yeah, independent yoga studios, gyms, spas, health stores, and the like. Reach out to us on the website, and we'll get the best drink to you.
And then what's the website?
Drink Bella, that's BELA with one L, drinkbella.com.
All right, Mike and Dave, best way to get a hold of Inception and your ideal customer?
Inception.com. With an X. Yeah, it's pronounced like the movie, but it's spelled with the X. And our ideal customer is somebody that is a product manufacturer, somebody that's looking to open, as Mike said, additional channels of revenue, someone who's looking to streamline their logistics process, and somebody that's interested in getting off the Amazon platform and connecting with their customers directly.
And owning the relationships.
That's correct.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for sharing your story today.
Thank you very much for having us.
All right, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.